Hello, and welcome to This Week at Charlestown Road, a branch of the Heaven Bound podcast. My name is Jason Harden. I'm here with Roger Schaus. This is where we reflect on the weekend that was. We dig a little deeper into a recent sermon to give you something to think about as this week unfolds, but also preview what's to come in days ahead here at Charlestown Road. Roger, this past Sunday, you took us to a trial bigger than the trial of the century.
Yeah, the trial of the century is a common phrase. It's really been used multiple times in a lot of different trials. It draws the media in, and there's a lot of attention and buzz about those things. But when we go to the book of Job, we see that this is probably the trial of all trials. It says in chapter 40 and verse 1 and 2, as God speaks, he says, will the fault finder contend with the Almighty? And there's two significant phrases there. The idea of a fault finder is one who finds fault, accusing, pointing a finger at, or blaming. The word contend there, it's a legal word. It means litigation or taking to court. And what God is basically saying to Job is, you're taking me to court, you're going to be the prosecutor, and you're going to put me on the stand, and you're going to accuse me. And what's interesting, as I kind of was working on this lesson, is that the great writer C.S. Lewis once said that the ancient man approached the gods as the accused person approaches his judge. But then he says modern man has reversed that. Modern man acts as if he is the judge and God is on trial. And what happens is if God doesn't meet our standards, then we toss God out. We don't believe in God anymore. And so in the lesson, we just kind of looked at three different areas in which we kind of put God on trial. And the first one was when life just doesn't turn out the way I think it should. You know, I've got in my mind how things should be, and when they don't work out that way, I begin to say why and expect God to be the one who answers me in that way. And then secondly, when the Bible doesn't read the way I think it should. And when the Bible doesn't talk about the things I wanted to talk about, we put God on trial. And then the third way is when the church doesn't take care of all the needs in our community, and we think it should. We think it's there to take care of the totality of man, do everything for man. And when it doesn't do that, then we get upset with God. We put God on trial. And so that was kind of the gist of the lesson. We added some things here and there to kind of talk about our response to such things as that. But that kind of takes us back to the book of Job.
Sure. If you have not had the opportunity to watch or listen to that sermon, I would certainly encourage you to do that. It is freely available at charlestownroad.org. Roger, as I think about this idea, if we were to go back in our Bibles to Job 38, Job 39, if time allowed, we could go on into Job 40 and 41. It's very interesting to me, and I think relevant here in the middle of the week, how God responds, in a sense, to this fault finder putting him on trial. Now, you and I have been talking about Job on Fridays here in the month of October. We're looking at life lessons from Job. And here recently we talked about, okay, well, sometimes bad things happen even to good people. And how should I deal with that? How should I be thinking in moments like that? What we want to avoid, of course, is, in a sense, doing exactly what you've talked about, putting God on trial. But it strikes me how God responds. You know, there are instances, especially it seems like in the Old Testament, when, in a sense, God is on trial and we've got some sort of a miracle. I think of Korah and his allies when they begin accusing Moses and Aaron and talking about killing them and leading the children of Israel back to Egypt. In a sense, God and his representatives are on trial, and the earth opens up and swallows Korah whole. Or I think of that great showdown in 1 Kings on Mount Carmel, where you've got Elijah and the prophets of Baal, and the gauntlet is being thrown down. If the Lord is God, follow him. If Baal is God, then we should all follow him. And fire falls from heaven. But Job 38 and 39 are different, and it's worth us thinking about here in the middle of the week, because one of the foundational things that it does is show us you and I don't have to have a miracle to know, number one, that God is, and that God is good. God reigns. He could have provided a miracle after 37 chapters of speculation in Job, but he doesn't. He draws attention to creation all around us. Let me begin by asking you, why is that so powerful that God just points out various aspects of his creation?
Well, because as he would say in the book of Psalms, and I'm grabbing it here over in the book of Romans chapter 1, he recognizes that these natural evidences attest to who he is. In Romans 1, verse 20, as he's talking about the Gentile world, for since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes, his eternal power, divine nature, have been clearly seen, being understood by what has been made, so that they are without excuse. So the natural world is exhibit A for God. He doesn't have to do a miracle. All he has to do is say, open your eyes, look around you. And all around you, it doesn't point to evolution. It points to him, the creator. We see order. We see a sense of seasons. We see a sense of beauty and grandeur as God himself is. And so as Jesus would say at the end of the Gospel of John, you know, blessed are those who have not seen, but they have believed. There's some testimony into God's word and his created world that points to him, and that's what God's doing here.
You mentioned Psalms. There are, of course, several different Psalms that we could go to. Psalm 19, perhaps, most famously, where David says, the heavens declare the glory of God, and the sky above proclaims his handiwork. Roger, I think some of your recent adult Bible classes on Sundays have dug into this idea, right? That day to day pours out speech and night to night reveals knowledge. We have lots of questions, sometimes big questions, and God has provided big answers, not in the forms of miracles, but day by day, night by night, in the creation all around us.
And I think so, there's times people say in their life, I just wish I really knew. I just really wish I knew God was. I really wish God would just come and tell me. And we live in a part of the world, we live in a part of time, where God doesn't speak directly to us personally. He speaks through Jesus Christ, Hebrews chapter 1 tells us. And so, but what we see is we're not in the dark room, we're not in the dark cave. The evidence of God is all around us. And what we have to do is open our eyes and see it. And let's go back to Job and let's see some of this.
Yeah, let's just camp in Job 38 and 39. And it seems like to me here in the middle of the week, this would be a good little exercise to help us, as you've said, open up our eyes. And so I'll take chapter 38 and I'll turn it over to you there at the very end of it as God finally responds. The Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind, Job 38 and verse 1. Who is this that darkens counsel by words without knowledge? It's a powerful way of basically saying, Job, you're talking about things you don't understand. Dress for action like a man. I will question you. And so in a sense, God has been on trial in recent chapters of Job, and now God is saying, okay, you want a response? Why don't you tell me where you were when? Sounds like a trial, right? But he begins very powerfully and very quickly, puts Job and really all of us in our place. Where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth? That's worth thinking about today. The earth on which we stand has a foundation that was laid. We dwell on a planet that has been made. In verse 8, he talks about the sea being shut up. up in its doors. You know, one of the reasons that we can go to the coast and stand there and look and watch and be in awe is because that coast has been defined, right? The sea has been established. In verse 12, have you commanded the morning since your days began and caused the dawn to know its place? I love this time of year, just personally, taking one of my daughters to school every day. We're in this little sweet spot right now. Of course, we leave the house at the same time every day, and here in the very beginning of October, we've got just a front row seat as we drive toward the east as the sun is rising and the dawn. That's not an accident. The dawn was made to know its place. Or verse 16, the springs of the sea and the recesses of the deep. There are parts of this planet that even in the 21st century, we have yet to really been able to explore. Or verse 19, the dwelling of light. Verse 22, the storehouses of snow and hail. Verse 25, the torrents of rain. Verse 31, he encourages us to look up and he talks about a variety of constellations, these arrangements of the stars in the sky or the clouds in verse 34 and the flood of waters that come from the clouds. All around us, God is encouraging us to look up and down and all around us. He's not providing a miracle, but he has not left himself without witness.
And what is chosen there from nature are visible things. Now, yes. Back in Job's day, they didn't know about DNA and atoms and the invisible things that are kind of visible to us today as we study science and things like that. But these are just surface things, and these are just the simple things. It continues on at the very end of chapter 38, and now God goes to the animal world. There's biology, there's botany, which studies plants, then there's zoology. I took that when I was in college. That's a study of animals. And so verse 39, can you hunt the prey for the lion or satisfy the appetite of young lions? Starting then all through chapter 39, it's like God's zoo here. He says in verse 1, do you know the time the mountain goats give birth? Do you observe the calving of the deer? Verse 5, who set out the wild donkey free, he says. Verse 13, he talks about the ostriches. And then in verse 19, he talks about the horse and all his might. Did you clothe his neck with a mane? Do you make him leap like the locust? How does a horse do those things? And again, he's just asking Job these questions. Verse 26, is it by your understanding that the hawk soars, stretching his wings toward the earth in the south? And again, Job would have known about these animals. This is part of Job's world. He would have seen those kind of animals. And as God is asking him those questions, we travel about today, and we were watching the other day a squirrel in our backyard leaping from branch to branch, going up a tree one way, coming down a tree another direction. How does he do that? We don't know. God did. Now, what's really interesting is these are just simple, visible things in God's creation. They point to God. We take lifetimes to study these animals, and we still don't quite figure them out. Now, you peel that layer back, and you start asking about the really serious questions, such as, why does God send rain and sun upon the wicked? We understand the righteous. Why does he do it upon the wicked? The book of Hebrews says in chapter 9, verse 27, it's appointed a man wants to die, and after that, the judgment. When is that time? When is that time to say, okay, this person's life is over? I mean, if we can't understand the mountain goat, we can't decide about snow. We don't know how much snow is going to be this year. We can guess, but we have no idea. And there's deep things like this. When is God going to send Jesus and end all of this? God knows those things. And we could think about how much mercy should God extend to a person. Those are the heavy, heavy things that is beyond you and I. And so God is just asking Job these simple questions about nature. And they do two things. First of all, it shows Job that you really don't know what you're talking about, Job. I mean, you're going to accuse me, and we're not even apple for apple here. We are so different plane. You're talking to the God of heaven. You don't know about hawks. You don't know about lions. You don't know about horses. And then if you wanted to talk about things, we could talk about judgment, mercy, the big things in life. And all of this was getting Job to see is that you don't have a right, you don't have a position to really put me on trial.
Yeah, I mean, this goes on, as we said, for another couple of chapters, and we would certainly encourage you to read that as you have the opportunity, but it all really lands in Job 42, where Job answers and says, I know that you can do all things and that no purpose of yours can be thwarted. You know, we can all get together. I mean, we could get half of Kentuckiana together and maybe half are excited for snow to come and the other half of Kentuckiana is dreading the falling of the snow that perhaps will come in the next few months. But it doesn't matter how many people we get on either side. We can't keep it from snowing, right? We can beg and beg and beg for it. And that doesn't mean that it's going to happen. We can beg and beg and beg that it doesn't fall, and that won't keep it from falling. There is no purpose of God, even at the most basic level of the falling of the rain, that can be thwarted. He can do all things. But maybe the best takeaway from our little conversation today is to encourage ourselves and our listeners. Slow down long enough. Open your eyes. Open your ears. We are in the midst of a wondrous season of the year. First full week in October, and all around us, exactly what God is describing is unfolding. As here on the hills of southern Indiana, we begin to see yellow and orange and red. We see those squirrels that you mentioned, Roger, flying all around these various trees, gathering nuts, knowing what is coming, right? All around us, we have testaments to this God. We don't have to have a miracle to know that He is, He reigns, He is good.
In many ways, what these are like footprints. And, you know, sometimes in the darkness, we wonder, well, where's God? Why doesn't God answer my prayer? You know, I'm just in the need of this. As we've been saying, open your eyes, look all about you. He's everywhere. And He has just left all these footprints that point to Him and to see how wonderful He is. I love how verse 4 of chapter 40 is said about Job. He says, behold, I am insignificant. What can I reply to thee? I lay a hand on my mouth. In other words, I got to quit talking. And that's the truth. Sometimes when we think about putting God on trial, we don't mean to do this, but when we ask God why, and as if He has to answer us, I demand to know why this happened. Why did my parent die? Why did this car accident happen? Why, God? Got to be careful about that. He doesn't owe you an answer. He doesn't have to get your approval to do what He does. He is the Lord of heaven and earth. And we know He's here because of all the things around us.
Maybe this would be a good thing for parents, grandparents to keep in mind. The next time you see a rainbow, not just to point it out, but to point out whose that is. The next time you go to the Louisville Zoo, you know, take in all of those animals. We did that not long ago and cracked up at some of the meerkats that are there, you know, just kind of standing up straight and looking around, almost as if they're a little person. When you're there with a little kid, you know, draw attention to that long neck of the giraffe. And then ask, whose idea was it to give that giraffe that long, long neck? Whose idea was it to give that zebra his stripes? What a powerful learning opportunity.
It is. And what it does is it reminds us that God is all around us. It reminds us that God made. We live in a culture that wants no God. We live in a culture that will look at those things and just say, well, they just happened by chance. But that makes no sense. That never happens. No one comes home and food just magically makes itself. Cars don't magically make themselves. There's always a designer. There's always somebody behind that. And this world we live in points to a God who's good, powerful, a God who has a big imagination. I mean, you look at that fat old pig or elephant, you look at that elephant with a long trunk, and there's that giraffe with a long neck. You sometimes think God's got a sense of humor. Look how he made these things. But they all serve those animals, and they function in just a way that God created them for that reason.
We hope that this little reflection has encouraged you to slow down a little, open your eyes, open your ears, and realize that God has provided such ample evidence for his existence, his eternal power, and divine nature all around us. Lord willing, this evening at 7 o'clock p.m., you and your family have the opportunity to learn a little bit more about this God. In our Building Blocks track of studies, we're looking at the opposite of this. We're exploring what is idolatry. Mankind has had a pesky way of trying to explain the wonders of creation around him without God, and that has led into idolatry. We're exploring this month why that is such a big deal. Roger, in the auditorium, you're taking adults through the Old Testament book of Ezra.
We are, and this will be our very first class as we kind of launch this, and we encourage you to come with us as we study some things. Powerful book, the book of Ezra, and wonderful lessons that will help us in our daily walk and our journey with God.
Thanks for joining us today. Thanks for listening to This Week at Charlestown Road, your ongoing encouragement and your shares, your likes, helping us spread the word. It means so much to us. We want everyone to slow down and look with their God-given eyes at the wonder of what he has done. We're looking forward to tonight, 7 o'clock p.m. We'd love to have you come and grow with us. We would love to have you join us this Sunday, the best day of the week. God is good. His church is good. His people are good. We want to encourage you to continue to grow right along with us. We would love to see you this Sunday.